to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
The third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast is once again upon us. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. James Edwards and Winston Smith guiding you through the murky waters this evening as we broadcast live from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. The Liberty News Radio Network getting us out there via satellite to their AM/FM affiliate stations. On the internet, we simulcast at thepoliticalcesspool.org, where you can also find our broadcast archives. And we are having a little not a laid-back show in terms of the content that we're bringing to your attention tonight, but laid back in so much as we don't have a featured guest for you this evening. Taking a breath. It's been a busy month, busy year for the cesspool, arguably our biggest year ever, and things continue to only get better. It started off this year, I think the first show this year, we had Mel Gibson's dad on the show, Hutton Gibson, to promote one of his books, and ever since then, we got attacked by, we gave you two of the things we normally give you in the very first week of this year, as we entered into our sixth year of broadcasting. We gave you a very prominent, big-name guest, Hutton Gibson, and we got attacked by a flaming sodomite, Perez Hilton. That's something you can almost expect on a weekly basis, and we gave it to you from the very get-go this year, and it's only continued, our star has only continued to shine more brightly in the weeks that have followed. So we're taking a light night tonight by not having a guest, but we have been talking about quite a bit thus far. Keith Olbermann and his attack of the program, Glenn Beck, my goodness, Glenn Beck. If you are just tuning in and you haven't seen Glenn Beck's commentary on the alleged black founding fathers of America, this is something you've got to see, and see it you can at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I talked last week, Winston, about Rush Limbaugh's paying Elton John $1 million to serve as his wedding singer, and we thought that was pretty bizarre that a so-called conservative family values radio host, a guy who bills himself as a voice of conservatism, would have a guy who is apparently such a polar opposite from him when it comes to social values to sing at his wedding. And now Rush Limbaugh, who is now apparently the Elizabeth Taylor of conservatism, said his recent wedding was his best one ever. It was his fourth wedding, and it was his best one ever, and he just loves Elton John. He spent 15 minutes talking about how much he loves Elton John on one of his programs this week since our last commentary on Limbaugh and John last week. Some conservatives think that's just terrific that Rush paid $1 million to hire a guy who says that Jesus Christ was a homosexual to sing at his wedding. Others are disappointed, but not really shocked. They're more surprised that Rush didn't take Elton on his honeymoon rather than his fourth wife. But again, Winston, the point is, people like Glenn Beck and his crazy stuff, and people like Rush Limbaugh prove again why this show stands head and shoulders above the competition. People like Limbaugh certainly more than Beck. Beck doesn't really give you too much as a conservative that you can feed on. But Limbaugh particularly will sprinkle in enough truth into his message to really make you believe that he is the genuine article. And of course, in doing that, it makes what he feeds you just palatable enough that you can take it. But he's never going to hit on issues of a racial animus. He's never going to talk about Jewish power and influence and whether or not that's a good or bad thing. Well, he's going to talk about it as if it's a good thing. He's never going to give you an objective commentary on it, as we try to do. And in many ways, people like that are more dangerous than people like Keith Olbermann. You know where Olbermann's coming from. But here in the political cesspool, we give people the unadulterated truth. Whether they agree with us or disagree with us, we are who we are. We stand for what we stand for. We have values and convictions that we're not going to trim the sails on. And that, Winston, is why we are where we are and many other pretenders aren't. It certainly shows the difference between a show like ours and someone like Limbaugh.
James, you're exactly right. We do stand apart. And I just want to tell folks that it's been my pleasure for these past, what, James, 5 years now to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. Doing what we do, it is liberating, my friends, to have a forum where you can tell the truth and where you can speak your convictions. And the thing is, you don't have to be a political cesspool co-host to do that. You risk no more nor less than we risk. We have jobs, and we are just in just as much danger of losing our jobs as any of you are for simply speaking our minds. And yet, we continue on. And James, I just want to take an opportunity to tell you that it's been a privilege and an honor to serve with you these past five years or so.
Well, you say that as if this is some sort of a farewell, and certainly nothing.
Oh, no, this is just the beginning, my friend.
That's absolutely right. And Winston, I mean, it doesn't have to be the beginning or the end for people to take stock in what they've won and what they've lost, and take a look at the inventory of the people that they're able to work with. And certainly being able to work with you has always been, continues to be, and will continue to be an honor. I mean, I guess we say this probably every show, but we have such a great relationship, not just me and you, but the whole staff and crew here at WLRM Radio, Liberty News Radio, our hosting staff, the production team. I mean, it is just something, it's an enviable camaraderie that I think everybody should be fortunate enough to experience friendships like this and working relationships like this. And I've been doing it for 6 years. You've been on board with this program for five of those 6 years. And I'm looking forward to not only the next five or 6 years, but longer than that. I think this show continues to break ground each and every year. And we do it with a very minuscule budget. That's why we ask that people support this program by buying my book or making a donation. We rely on listener support to get the job done. But get the job done is exactly what we've been doing. Getting the job done is something we've done for a long time, over half a decade now, and we're going to continue to do it. We're going to continue to do it in bigger and better ways, more efficient ways, more refined ways. I mean, we try to hone in and make our craft a little bit better each and every program, and it's been a great ride. This is certainly not anything I'd intended to talk about, but when you get me talking about it, I am sentimental and proud. I'm proud. And I'm proud of what we've done. I'm proud of what we do. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the next half decade has in store for this program and our listening audience. Because, again, you look back, you look at a show with such a small budget, operating budget, and you look at the amount of press we've gotten, and pound for pound, I can guarantee you that we have accomplished more than any other conservative organization in America in the 6 years we've been on the air. And I can say that without any degree of hesitation. And I say that very modestly, but very soberly as well. That's just a fact. If people knew what our monthly operating budget was compared to the hundreds of millions of dollars that our lavishly funded competition uses to attack us, and that we can stand toe-to-toe with them and get such tremendous amount of publicity, It's really a miracle, and it's a miracle that the audience enables, and it's something that I look at and just marvel over.
Hey, James?
Yeah.
If the amount of work that we get done on the minuscule amount of money we receive isn't proof enough of the spiritual underpinnings of this show, I don't know what is, because it truly is a miracle.
No, Winston, listen. What you said just then, it's perfectly... It makes our point perfectly. There has to be a divine providence guiding this program. I believe there to be. And when we say minuscule budget, I mean it is minuscule, certainly compared to the budgets of those who attack us. But when people send us $10, $100, whatever, every cent that we raise, you know, we stretch it to the max. I mean, we try to get everybody's dollar's worth. When they send us in a donation, when they buy a book, we are so thankful for everything, whether it's a dollar, $100, whatever. And you know, this is a program that truly continues to stand the test of time based upon donations, most all of which are less than $100.
Hey, James?
And that's incredible. In this day and age, that is incredible. We've got about 15 seconds to break, and I guess we better start talking about issues at some point this hour. But, yes, Winston.
I'd like to tell people that James made me pay full price for the book, too, and he even made me pay full price for the autograph.
No. I bought the book for Winston. I paid for Winston. We'll talk more about that later.
After these messages. Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't misunderstand me, baby. Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't misunderstand me, baby. Don't let me be. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, Winston Smith and I sharing a personal conversation that we let our entire audience listen in on that last segment. And Winston, you had something further to share here at the top of this segment.
James, you said something in the last segment that reminded me of something that's been stuck in my craw for the past few days. You mentioned scumbagus Maximus Perez Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a scummier person than him, well, maybe the FLC and the ADL are scummier than him. But Perez Hilton is a truly disgusting person. He is a waste of life.
Now, most of our listening audience probably is lucky enough not to know much about Perez Hilton.
Well, he is the one who, in case you don't remember, he is the one who sabotaged Carrie Prejean at the Miss USA pageant. Anyhow, he has posted a link to a picture of Miley Cyrus. Now, I'm not a fan of Miley Cyrus. I'm really not. I think she's becoming something that she didn't know she was going to become, but in entertainment these days, she's got to become what she's becoming in order to make any money. But Perez Hilton posted a link to an unflattering picture of her. And I'm not going to go into the disgusting details of it all, but it doesn't surprise me that scum like Perez Hilton did that. But I want to say this. Billy Ray, where are you? Why have you not beat a path to Perez Hilton's door and beat him to a fruit juicy pulp? Now, I'm a Southern man. James is a Southern man. A lot of our listeners, a lot of the men in our audience are Southern men. Billy Ray, you're a Southern man. Why are you letting that light-loafered waste of life queer get away with doing that to your daughter? That's really all I want to say about that.
Well, that's right, Winston. You know, we never advocate violence, and I'm sure you're talking tongue-in-cheek there. But, yeah, sure, I mean, when you allow people to malign your family, your daughters, I mean, there comes a time when a man needs to be a man. And you can certainly be a man without doing anything extra legal. But at the same time, I mean, why hadn't Billy Ray taken this guy to task, at least in the court of public opinion? Well, that's a good question, and we wait for him to answer it. But, of course, yeah, Perez Hilton, this homosexual blogger, this radical sodomite, he didn't like the fact that we had Hutton Gibson on the show, and Hutton Gibson apparently said something about sodomy that Perez didn't like, and so he attacked us and Hutton for our troubles. But that was back in January, and we talked about it then. I'm sure you can do a Google search and read more. But that's neither here nor there at the time, although we do like to resuscitate some of our greatest hits from time to time on the program, and so we were just doing that now. back to something more relevant, at least in terms of today's news.
You crack me up, James.
Well, I do what I can. a liberal, Winston, wants to know, is California finished? And this is something that we talk about on the blog, and this is a recent blog entry at our website. Is California finished? Well, the answer to that, of course, as I wrote on the blog, is unless it deports about 15 million people, yes, it is finished. But if you read this article, you'll see that he is honest enough to admit that the reason California is now ranked 50th, dead last, in other words, in education in many categories, is because it's filled with low IQ immigrants from the third world. But then he ignores all that when writing his prescription and turns around and says that the way to solve the problem is to create a master plan for good government. So in other words, bigger government. More bureaucracy. That's how you're finally going to get these third world illegal aliens to perform at an intellectual level with the European stock of this country, native founding stock. So, you know, again, that I said that to open up a can of worms pertaining to immigration. Winston, any thoughts from you on that particular story or immigration in general? It's something we've been covering quite extensively here on the show in recent months.
This gentleman is wishing for a master plan for good government. James, that master plan already exists. It's called the Constitution of the United States of America. If we followed that, we wouldn't have to think about deporting 15 million people because they wouldn't be here illegally in the first place. That is the master plan for government. The men who wrote that, the men who framed it, the men who founded this country, they knew precisely what good government was because they had experienced bad government. And they came up with a pretty good model. In fact, when countries decide that they want to be free, they turn to the United States Constitution as a model. But we don't pay attention to that anymore. My friends, make no mistake about it. The Constitution of the United States is a dead document in this country. In fact, George W. Bush famously proclaimed that it's nothing but a blank, blank piece of paper. And he's the President of the United States, for crying out loud.
That's right.
And do you think Barry Sotomayor, Barack Hussein Obama cares about the Constitution? Well, of course not. He's a Marxist. He's a hyper-liberal. He doesn't care about the Constitution one bit. And Congress doesn't care about the Constitution. In fact, when they're confronted with the Constitution and when they actually do have to deal with it, they handle it like it was somebody else's dirty underwear. Oh, they'll deal with it for as long as they absolutely have to, but they will look for the first opportunity to be rid of the thing. They don't like the Constitution, and not even Republicans like the Constitution.
Well, you know, again, and that just proves what we have been saying for, again, over a half decade, that there is little to no difference between these two parties. They are both owned and operated by the same interests, and we know what those interests are. And they are, in fact, two wings of the same vulture. And until that changes, until our people start applying some of the tenets that I've laid out in the book, you know, we are never going to get off of this hamster wheel. We're going to continue to run in circles. We're going to continue to spin our wheels into oblivion. And all the while, the cultural Marxists will be moving forward unabated. The line in the sand will be continued to be pushed out, and we'll continue to lose more and more ground. And Winston, that's something that I just don't want to see happen, you know, and that's why this program is here. That's why we do what we do. We want to be part of a solution that's right for all Americans.
Oh, you're absolutely right, James. That's why we do what we do. That's why we take the risks we do. Buy the book, folks. I had to get that plug in there.
That's right.
www.thepoliticalcesspool.org/book, $14.95 plus shipping and handling.
Winston, please, be more shameless if you can. Please. Well, I would direct people also to... I'll pick up the slack where Winston leaves off. I will encourage people to go directly to the book sales page. And honestly, do buy a copy. It will help support our work, and that'll make you feel good on the inside. And it's a book that I think you'll very much enjoy reading, and you can go directly to the sales page at racismbook.com, www.racismbook.com, or thepoliticalcesspool.org/book, or just go to the Political Cesspool and link over there yourself. But we've got much more forthcoming. We're running out of time, but we've still got some time left, and we're excited about the final two segments of tonight's broadcast. So go get a drink of water. Take a bathroom break and come back and listen to the final 30 minutes of tonight's broadcast. Winston and I are going to wrap it up with a pretty little bow when we return.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, one of the things that we mention in my book, Racism Schmacism, how liberals use the R word to push the Obama agenda, is how this absurd term can mean so many different things. Everything now, if it feels racist to a minority, then it is racist according to the media elite. Black holes, when an astronomer mentions black holes, that is racist. Greeting cards are racist. Everything is racist if a white person is mentioning them. You know, but one of the things, and I don't want to digress, but you know, we know how much minorities hate the racist structure of this country, the world, anything and everything, white people in general, you name it. But it's funny to me that they love the racist technology that our racist people have invented, like phones and air conditioners and airplanes and just about everything in the world. You know, they hate racists, but they like racist technology. But that's neither here nor there. Another thing that is racist is pictures. Funny pictures are now racist as well. And Winston, I can tell by your remark that you know where I'm going with this, because it's something that, again, we have posted on our website. With non-whites, every little incident, no matter how innocuous, seems to turn into racism. And I now read from the story that we have referenced. You can read for it. You can read it yourself by going to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're quoting the Dallas Morning News. Here's what the Dallas News had to say. When Shamika Neal saw a photo of her 11-year-old son with his head in a trash can at Blanton Elementary School in Carrollton, Texas, she was outraged. She later found that the photo had been taken by school officials around May 5th and was displayed on a bulletin board at the school. Neal then took a photo of the photo with her cell phone. She was told that it was part of a reading initiative called I'd Rather Be Reading, in which students posed in different settings performing different tasks. That had nothing to do with reading, Neal said. I'm sure a very literate individual, Winston. It was humiliating for him because the kids were teasing him, and of course we know that that's racist too. In the photo, fourth grader Ladarian Neal is pictured bent over a chair in the nurse's office with his head in a trash can. A nurse stands by holding him, holding the can. A bubble over the woman's head says, I'd rather be reading. Ladarian said the library approached him while he was visiting the nurse's office to take his regular medication and asked him if he wanted to take a picture for this project. He said okay, but said he was confused, which I believe. She then asked him to put his head in a trash can for the photo as if he were vomiting. I really didn't understand. It was really dirty in there, he said. His head was pushed right down into the trash can. Neal believes that the incident was retaliation for another incident she complained about involving another daughter, a third grader, being sent to alternative school by administrators. Juanita Wallace, the president of the Dallas NAACP chapter, also met with school officials along with the mother. And this is what she had to say. This leader of the local NAACP, which at this point, Winston, has no reason whatsoever for existing. We have a black president. We have a system in place where blacks get not only equal opportunity to work, but preferential treatment when it comes to hiring in the form of quotas, set-asides, and affirmative action. If you are a token minority, if you're a minority, you have really got it made. You've got to go out of your way to muck things up for you. But this is what she had to say over this whole big picture flap. What do you think she said? I mean, you know what she said. I thought it was a racist move on their part to have a picture of a little black boy with his head in a trash can. So, here's a school, Winston, in Dallas, that is taking funny pictures of various students doing weird things, all to promote this reading initiative. But why does it not surprise me that this local NAACP figurehead says this is racist? She goes on to say that the school's principal was not apologetic during the meeting and emphasized that the photo was part of an initiative, as I just mentioned, to encourage children to read more. Wallace is a former reading specialist, she says, and said she didn't understand the educational value of the activity. Yeah, you know, and again, if she's the local head of an NAACP, I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of things she doesn't understand. Eating bananas is racist. Talking about black holes is racist. Funny pictures are racist. Where will it end? But, you know, am I seeing this right or am I seeing this wrong, Winston? And now I'll turn over the commentary to you. Because on one hand, I see this as just another frivolous example of how anything and everything is racist if any black malcontent claims it to be. But on the other hand, when I look at it, this could be a racist incident, not because of the picture, but because it was done to encourage kids to read, which is a wholly Eurocentric activity. So what do you think? What's your take?
First of all, I want to read a commenter to your blog posting. Says, his name is Larry, and he says, so I don't get this straight. The child's mother is concerned about him being humiliated by a photo of him vomiting, but found nothing wrong with naming him Ladarian. Really, though, that's an excellent comment.
I love that.
There are a lot of things you can notice in this story. It's amazing what you can glean from what is not said. First of all, it's Shamika, his mother, who is expressing the outrage. And the reason Shamika, his mother, is expressing the outrage is because Ladarian's father is nowhere to be found. If this is something that happened to my son, I wouldn't leave it to my wife to raise Cain about it. I'd be all over it myself.
Right.
Just like Billy Ray should be all over Perez Hilton. Another story. But this whole incident here, you know, Judge, you're right. What you said about the NAACP not needing to exist and a lot of things that she doesn't understand. You also mentioned in here that talking about black holes is racist. Are you referring to the incident last week with a Hallmark graduation card?
That's right. Elaborate a little bit more about what the flap was there, because we didn't have time to get into it last week on the show.
What happened with that was the Hallmark Corporation had created a set of graduation cards for graduates, of course, and one of them had a space travel theme. I think there was some Martians or something on it. And you opened it up, it was one of those talking types of cards, and the two voices were of the characters supposedly on the greeting card. They have names, I don't know what they are, but they mentioned black holes. They said something like, oh, you black holes, you're so ominous and so threatening. Well, the NAACP said that it was a racist card because when the characters said black holes, it sounded like they were saying black hoes. Now, there are a couple of things you can say about that. First of all, when did the phrase hoes become the sole domain of blacks? Is the word hoes now a code word for black women? I don't know. You decide. I'm sure they'll decide it is. But the end of it is the Hallmark Corporation had to pull that card, but they did so without apologizing. One thing you should learn, would learn if you would buy James Edwards' book, Racism, Smacism, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org/book, $14.99 plus shipping and handling. You would learn that you should never apologize. P.G. Wodehouse taught us that, the great British humorist writer. He said, a good general rule in life is to not apologize. The right sort of people don't want apologies, and the wrong sort will take a mean advantage of them. And that's what the NAACP exists to do. It exists to force apologies out of people. Now, this school board, they very wisely did not apologize, just like the Hallmark Corporation did not apologize. Certainly shouldn't have pulled the card. But still, Shamika is the only shameful part of this story, James, is Shamika. First, for not letting her husband take charge of this situation. Of course, we know why that didn't happen. And second of all, for naming her son Ladarian, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
no,
I don't
wonder,
get the name.
You know, James, no wonder these blacks take on these weird names like, well, just think of any crazy phrase you can comes to mind, and chances are there's a black person who's taken on that name. What kid wants to be named Ladarian, for crying out loud?
I like
classic.
He's
going to change his name to, I don't know, Body Bag or, you know, some tough-sounding name. And, you know, probably curse his mother for naming him Ladarian. Maybe it's a boy named Sue type of scenario. What do you think, James?
Well, they do have some very interesting names, I will tell you that, and there's nothing, that's just part of their culture, quote-unquote, they'll say. But that's neither here nor there, but we do have something else that's racist, and that is taking funny pictures of people, Hallmark cards, and so much more. We'll be back to wrap up the show right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell him, I didn't. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the final segment of tonight's live broadcast. Of course, we'll be back with you next week, as always, here on the Political Cesspool Radio program, which you can tune into each and every Saturday evening, beginning at 6 p.m. Central Time on the Liberty News Radio Network, AM 1380 in Memphis, thepoliticalcesspool.org. So many ways to listen. The audience has never been bigger, and we're so excited about that. Now, Winston, one last thing I feel as though we should talk about tonight, and you're well familiar with the scenario here. What is going on with Alvin Green and South Carolina? What race is it? South Carolina, is it?
South Carolina Senate.
There it is. I knew I blogged about it. I can't remember every detail of everything I do.
That's suspicious. You're a busy guy.
That's true. That's true. Very busy. Can you lay out the story, Winston, about Alvin Green and what's so unique about his political triumph there?
Alvin Green who knows who Alvin Green is? That's the question of the day. Who is Alvin Green? Alvin Green is, as you write in the blog, James, he's 32 years old. He lives with his dad. He's been unemployed since the Army booted him out nearly a year ago. He's got an indictment against him for showing pornography to a white woman at a local college and asking for sex. But somehow, Alvin Green won the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senator from, I'm sorry, it wasn't state senator, it's U.S. Senator. But Alvin Green won the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senator from South Carolina, and he won it with 60% of the vote against a well-known, well-qualified opponent, even though Alvin never held one campaign event, never put up one sign, has no website, and can't show any proof that he has anything in the way of campaigning. Of course, Alvin Green is black. But, James, this guy has thrown the Democrat Party in South Carolina into a fit. And I can see why. This is going to be one of the funniest things to watch. Have you seen any interviews with Alvin Green? He frustrates the heck out of interviewers because he gets one-word answers. He's not very talkative, and that's probably just as well because he probably doesn't know too much about putting words together. But the odd thing about this, James, is the South Carolina Democrat Party is blaming everybody but the voters for voting for this man. They're saying that he's a Republican plant. I think it's Alcee, what's his name, a congressman in South Carolina, saying, I smell elephant dust all over this thing. But when it comes down to it, folks, the voters of South Carolina, namely the black voters, the black Democrat voters of South Carolina, voted for this man who did not even run a campaign. He just somehow scraped up the, $10,000 for a registration fee and got his name on the ballot, and suddenly he's a Democrat nominee. Now, they posited many reasons why this happened. Of course, they say he's a Republican plant. But some people are saying it's because his name appeared first on the ballot. Now, Jon Stewart from The Daily Show picked up on this story, and he says, so now the culprit behind this is the alphabet. And then Jon Stewart says he would be the first to congratulate the next governor of South Carolina, Alvin A. Aardvark, or something like that. But the fact is, folks, there's this guy who can't put two words together, who is the Democrat nominee, and, you know, he stands a good chance of beating Jim DeMint.
The man admittedly spent not one dime on his campaign. There is no there is no reason whatsoever. No one can figure out. This is such an anomaly. No one can figure out how he was able to win. I mean, he puts his name on the ballot. He's won. As Winston said, he's never been involved with politics. He's sort of like he's a political novice. I mean, he's a nobody. Living at home, kind of a semi-criminal malcontent. And now he's the Democratic nominee for one of the biggest seats in South Carolina. And if you've watched, and we have, Keith Olbermann is all over the political cesspool this week. We linked up, to, of course, his condemnation of us in the worst person in the world commentary of Monday. And we've also linked to his video in which he interviews Alvin Green. Now, have you watched that yet, Winston? He certainly treats Alvin Green a little bit differently than he treated us. I mean,
that's true.
He treats him as if he's you got to watch it. Kid Gloves doesn't even go far enough. I mean, he treats him like he's a credible, serious candidate. I mean, he treats him like he deserves to be on national television. It's just, it's crazy, bizarre stuff. The kind of stuff that you would expect to hear about here in the political cesspool. And certainly we're going to give you all the news that is news, as much as we can fit into a three-hour format here on the show. So, Alvin Green running, and in a position to do quite well, apparently.
I think he's going to. It's going to be funny to watch, but I think that the black voters of South Carolina and the self-hating white Democrats, they will rally around this guy. I think he's got a good chance of doing it, even though Jim DeMint is far more qualified, far better for the people of South Carolina than this guy who's got a felony warrant out against him. But I think, you know, well, what can you say about it? People have been saying this is South Carolina politics at its finest. And I lived in South Carolina for, nearly 15 years. And the politics there are almost as insane as they are in Memphis. In Memphis, the politics are mean. The politics are cutthroat. The politics are filthy. South Carolina, the politics is a freak show.
Now, you have had some life experience in South Carolina, so you would know. You're speaking from a position of authority.
Oh, yes,
there.
Yes. As I said, I spent nearly 13 years there. Met my wife there. Three of my babies were born there. I have deep roots in South Carolina, and I love South Carolina. I love South Carolinians, especially the old good Charlestonians.
Oh, that's right. You don't get any better than that. And South Carolina is so steeped in history, so uniquely Southern, going back to their days, of course, before the war between the states, and then during their fight for Southern independence and the role that they played in that. South Carolina. I have been born and raised in Tennessee. Tennessee will always be my home. Tennessee will always be the state I have the most love for. But following Tennessee and perhaps Mississippi, where I have, you know, extended family roots, South Carolina is right up there. I love the South. Alabama, I love it all. Alabama, Georgia, Florida, my goodness, what good times I've had down there. But South Carolina is certainly special. The Hunley, the story there. So much. South Carolina, such a beautiful state. It deserves not to be a punchline in this way. It deserves better than Alvin Green.
Well, South Carolina deserves better than Alvin Green, but let me tell you, the black people of South Carolina, they got exactly what they deserved because they voted for the man. Nobody held a gun to anybody's head saying, you vote for Alvin Green. Nobody ran against Alvin Green. Well, yeah, a guy did run against Alvin Green, a very qualified white man. And that tells the story there, James. A white man was running against this guy who was as Negro as Negro can be. And yet, they voted for Alvin Green. What can you say? That's its own commentary.
Well, that is, and unfortunately, the time for us to provide commentary tonight is just about to come to a close. We will be back with you, of course, next Saturday for another live and exciting, riveting installment of the Political Cesspool. To keep yourself entertained and occupied between now and then, we encourage you to go to our website. We update it every day with what we think are very good blog entries. And
buy the book!
Buy the book! Yeah, do that, please! Do it! Do it for me, do it for yourself, do it for dear old dad for Father's Day tomorrow. It's a good book. Go to racismbook.com, www.racismbook.com. Buy your copy if you have not done so already. I know our caller earlier in the show had said he had not yet bought it. Buy your book between now and the show next week. That is my modest assignment for you, if you would be so kind.
Go to racismbook.com, so should you.
racismbook.com. Buy your book between now and next Saturday, and we will see you next week. I'll be 30 years old when I come back to you. This is my last night to host the show as a 29-year-old. I'll be 30 next week, and I look forward to bringing you a very good show. For Winston Smith, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, Bill Rowland, Keith Alexander, the rest of the staff and crew of the show, I'm James Edwards. We'll see you next week. God bless you, my friends. God keep you. Remember to live life the way we do, without retreat, surrender, or apology. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.